Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. It's Crossing the Sea of Reeds time tonight on the JE. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host, and you are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. Well, it's been 6 days now since the Jews left Egypt, and tonight they crossed the Sea of Reeds, or as some say, the Red Sea. The time folks learn all night just so they can be awake when the sun comes up and meet the same time as when the sea split, letting the Bnei Yisrael cross and drowning their pursuers, the army of Pharaoh. Well, the redemption that started 1 week ago is still not complete. Pharaoh's armies were chasing the Jews, who were on foot with chariots, and they soon caught up to them. There was no place to go. They had the sea in front of them, and they had Pharaoh's chariots behind them. Some thought they should just sit and pray. Some thought they should stand and fight. And some thought maybe they should go back to Egypt and, you know, just go back into bondage again. And some thought that if Hashem had taken them this far, they should have enough emuna, or faith, and press on. One such person was Nachshon ben Aminadav. He walked right into the sea and kept walking till the water went right up to his nose before the sea parted. It was his faith in the one above that convinced Hashem to part the sea for the Jews. As they crossed, the Medrash says that each tribe had their own separate path, but they could see all the other tribes as they went through to, of course, keep the concept of Achdus, of oneness, among all the tribes. And they had all kinds of fruit and goodies along the way. Their buddies chasing them, of course, were driving hard. Chariot wheels were falling off. And they weren't having such a great time. Once on the other side, the Jews witnessed the sea closing in on the Egyptian army and kind of saw their pursuers were no more. Well, it really wasn't until then that the Bnei Yisrael were really free, which is why this holiday is also called the Season of Our Freedom, as well as the Holiday of Eating Matzahs. We in this country take freedom for granted. It's because we're only beginning to see what slavery to a government can be. The rapid increases in punishing regulation that helps no one but government in its quest grows even bigger and bigger. Collects more taxes, it's able to make you live your life for the government rather than having the government work for you. Remember what the Bnei Yisrael learned in Egypt. When the government is afraid of you, that's freedom. When you are afraid of the government, that's slavery. And speaking of freedom, the staff of the JE is free to bring you the best in Shabbos preparation programming. I love that. With Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Moshe Bakar, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Ms. Devorah DeLynn, and Dr. Michael Shulman. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. And we're going to have a candid comments segment this week. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be discussing Prime Minister Olmert's latest attempt to put Israel at risk and neutralize the hard-fought victories that have cost so many lives. And, of course, we'll have your community announcements, and we do have a bunch of Mazel Tovs today, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio coming up in the half hour. Don't forget, you can always find us on the web at JewishExperienceRadio.com. Don't forget to sponsor your favorite segment, or you can honor Simcha or remember a Yortzeit. Your help keeps the JE on the air for you. And as always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, and Artistic Photography. And don't forget, candlelighting time this week is 7:52 p.m. And enjoy the music on this show, because this will be the last music before we get into some a cappella here for a couple of weeks as we head into of course, Lag BaOmer, and then on into the holiday of Shavuot. And then we'll be back to the music again. So we enjoy having you with us. We got a great show coming up for you, and it starts right now.
ויקרב לו ידוי השם אלוקי, השם אלוקי, מי יועיל מי דקו. אני מניע זמתו, למניע זמתו, כבוי חו ולא ידעו. השם אלוקי, השם אלוקי, מי יועיל מי דקו.
An insight on this week's Parsha is our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
Our response to the two sons, the simple son and the She'eno Yodea Lisho, the clueless son, seem to be in opposite order. The simple son, who is more advanced than the clueless son, shows at least some interest in the rituals of the evening, asking, "What is this?" So surely we should have explained to him, it is because of this that we were redeemed from Egypt and the merit of the special mitzvos performed on this night. The clueless son, however, shows no interest at all, So would it not have been appropriate to try and grab his attention with the impressive miracles of the Exodus, saying, with a strong hand, Hashem took us out of Egypt? The key to answering this question lies in the fact that the clueless son is placed here last of all. Could he possibly be worse than the wicked son? Of course, in terms of practical observance, the clueless son vastly surpasses the wicked son. He performs the necessary rituals, and he certainly does not challenge any sacred practices or texts. But the clueless son is sadly further from being redeemed than his wicked brother, for he suffers from two problems that, when they strike together, defy any simple cure: ignorance and apathy. The wicked son may be a terror, challenging everything we do, but at least he takes an interest in the evening's activities. Judaism angers him, but at least that shows that there is somebody home. When the wicked son finally comes around to our way of thinking, he will be a passionate Jew and an asset to his people. But the clueless son has almost immunized himself against Yiddishkeit. It is not that his soul lacks passion, for when it comes to other endeavors, such as making money, we see he has great talents and drive. But Torah seems to just make him switch off. Nothing in the Seder seems to engage his interest. "Just tell me what to do so I can get it over and done with," he says. So by placing the clueless son last, the Haggadah warns us that apathy is the greatest danger of all. Our only hope is to say to him, "It is because of this that Hashem did for me when I left Egypt. You are a fine religious Jew, but your observance is lifeless and performed by rote. It is time for you to leave Egypt. It is because of this, the mitzvahs of the Pesach sacrifice and matzah, that our ancestors left Egypt, both of which represent a passionate dedication to Judaism, and not mere observance by rote." The simple son, however, is already engaged in the Seder, and even asks questions, so we do not need to prove to him the necessity of leaving Egypt. All that is required is to show him the right approach, namely, that we must always act with a strong hand. The lesson here is a powerful one. We should never be perturbed by those who are angry and antagonistic towards Judaism. For such individuals are blessed with passion, a gift that needs not, chas v'shalom, to be extinguished, but rather redirected for the good.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, and it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600. Now it's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, 1810 to 1883. In 1838, having developed into a great scholar, Rabbi Yisrael entered public life, circulating through the small hamlets of Lithuania, eventually heading a prestigious Talmudic academy in Vilna, the so-called Jerusalem of Lithuania. His credentials as a towering Talmudic scholar now evident to all, Rabbi Yisrael felt that the time was ripe to launch his Musar movement. In 1849, he opened a small yeshiva where he concentrated on molding disciples of preeminent intellectual caliber in the doctrines of Musar. These students became the standard bearers of the fledgling movement, establishing it in scholarly circles. Although Rabbi Yisrael intended his movement to include the bulk of the Jewish people, the intellectual bent of Musar study tended to attract highly learned individuals. The intimate individualistic spiritual introspection that Musar study required was and is beyond the capacity of the average Jew. Rabbi Yisrael traveled to Germany and France in 1857, spending his final years there, attempting to reach Western European Jewry with his message. He died in Königsberg, Germany, now Kaliningrad, Russia, in 1883. Astounding stories were told of Rabbi Yisrael's behavior toward human beings. Although he did not intend it, many of his actions received broad coverage in the press, books, and literary works, evoking broad acclaim all over the world. In the words of one of his disciples, "Our master and rabbi illuminated the eyes of the diaspora through his many inquiries into and vast knowledge of the laws pertaining to money matters, robbery, and damages. In this respect, he was indeed unique in these generations." Three of the myriad examples of Rabbi Yisrael's behavior give a faint glimpse of this giant. While Rabbi Yisrael was eating, a poor widow came before him and complained that her son was about to be conscripted into the Russian army. If someone could only speak on her behalf to a certain Jewish leader who was well known to the authorities, there was a chance of freeing the boy. Rabbi Yisrael stopped eating. "If my son were in such a position," he said, "could I sit quietly and eat?" He immediately left the house and ran out to exert some pressure on behalf of the widow as if the boy were really his son. Once before Pesach, Rabbi Yisrael was unable to be present during matzah baking, in which he was extremely meticulous. His disciples, who were overseeing the baking, asked him for directions. Rabbi Yisrael instructed them to be extremely careful not to upset the woman who needed the dough and not to rush her, for she was a widow, and to upset her would be a violation of the prohibition against oppressing widows and orphans. Shmais chapter 22, Pasuk 21. According to Rabbi Yisrael, the matzah must be kosher according to both the laws of Pesach and the laws of human relations. Another time, Rabbi Yisrael was invited to one of his disciples' Shabbos evening meal. The host assured Rabbi Yisrael that he would have an uplifting experience from the lengthy Torah discussions and zmiros sung at the table. Rabbi Yisrael agreed to attend, providing the meal was shortened by 2 hours. Having little choice, the host reluctantly consented to the strange condition. At the meal, Rabbi Yisrael rushed one course after another, and they ended in less than an hour. Greatly perturbed, Rabbi Yisrael's host asked if his esteemed teacher had found fault in the host's conduct. Rabbi Yisrael did not reply, but asked the cook to come into the dining room. "Please forgive me," he said to her, "for tiring you this evening and causing you to hurry and serve one course after another without a break." The cook exclaimed, "If only you would come every Friday night. Thanks to you, I can go home 2 hours early." Rabbi Yisrael turned to his disciple and said, "Your conduct at the table is truly praiseworthy, but not at the expense of others." In the final hours of his life, a simple Jew attended to Rabbi Yisrael. He spent his last moments reassuring the man that dead people are harmless and that there is no reason to fear being alone with a corpse. Rabbi Yisrael died as he had lived, always showing concern for the other person. This is Rabbi Yosef Eisen wishing you a happy and healthy Shabbos and Pesach.
Now, from the Israel National Radio Newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
This Shabbat is the seventh day of Passover, or Pesach in Hebrew, when the focus is on the miracle of the splitting of the Sea of Reeds to end the children of Israel's slavery in ancient Egypt. Terrorist groups converging on Cairo to discuss the Hamas proposal for a 6-month truce with Israel to present to Egyptian intelligence chief Omar Suleiman to bring to Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Defense Minister Ehud Barak this coming week. Iraq reportedly receptive to the proposal. Under the deal, Hamas would ensure an end to terrorist activity, including the firing of missiles at Israeli targets and the smuggling of weapons into Gaza for 6 months. In exchange for Israel and Egypt opening the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt, Israel easing restrictions on cargo in and out of Gaza, and stopping military activities in Gaza, such as the arrest and elimination of area terrorists. Hamas is looking to extend that to the eastern PLO-assigned areas, with Israel formulating its response, defense officials saying that Israel will only agree to the Gaza measures if Egypt cracks down on smuggling into the Hamas-controlled area and kidnapped Army Corporal Gilad Shalit is released. The meeting in Cairo is also supposed to resolve conflicts between the terrorists. Quoting Don Gillerman, Israel's ambassador at the United Nations, "We don't think Hamas is trustworthy. Whenever they offer a truce, it is because we have been able to hit them where it really hurts, and they then need time in order to regroup, in order to rearm and be ready for the next round. We do not intend to give them that time, and we do not believe any truce offer that comes from Hamas is indeed trustworthy." Hamas calling on the public in Gaza to arrive en masse at crossings into other parts of Israel after Friday prayers to break the blockade imposed by Israel in response to rocket attacks launched by Gaza terrorists. Some violent clashes expected. Hamas apparently trying to erase the memory of failed anti-Israeli demonstrations in February, in which Hamas was planning to create a human chain made up of 40,000 children that was to cross Gaza from north to south. Ultimately, the residents of Gaza did not heed Hamas's calls, and the demonstrations, hailed in advance as massive, yielded a disappointing turnout on the order of 5,000 people. Israel has accused Hamas of fabricating a fuel crisis in Gaza by refusing to distribute the million liters of fuel Israel delivered Wednesday, in addition to the million liters delivered 3 weeks ago when terrorists murdered two Israeli fuel workers during a delivery operation. Critics of Israel say that the fuel that was delivered is industrial fuel for the Gaza electricity plant and not for motor vehicles. The United Nations says that means it cannot deliver humanitarian aid. Gazans cited by the Haaretz Daily say Hamas officials have taken fuel for their own purposes and given it to high-ranking officials, government employees, and Hamas students, but failed to distribute the remainder to the population at large. Jewish community leaders in the Golan say that residents of the area will continue to build and develop the area despite reports that Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has offered to give the region to Syria in exchange for a peace treaty. Following an emergency meeting in Katzrin to discuss Olmert's offer, they announced that they would lobby for a bill which would require the government to hold a referendum before offering the Golan to Syria. They have also turned to Turkey to act as an intermediary based on its dispute with Syria over the Hatay or Iskenderun province, which Turkey annexed in 1939. Syria gave in 2004. Over the next several days, the Prime Minister is expected to decide whether or not to support a bill aimed at granting financial compensation to residents of 74 Israeli communities in Judea and Samaria who agreed to leave their homes voluntarily. Proponents of the bill say up to 50% of Israelis in the communities in question would accept the offer to relocate to pre-1967 Israel, making it easier for the government to destroy Jewish towns in the area in order to sign a peace deal with the PLO. Community leaders in Judea and Samaria have expressed skepticism and say that few of the area's Jews are willing to leave their homes. Shabbat is Kaf Aleph for the 21st of Nisan on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast, variable high cloudiness with a significant drop in temperatures, but still warmer than usual, especially in the hills on Friday. Slightly cooler Shabbat on Sunday with a chance of very light local rain Saturday night and Sunday morning. Partly cloudy with no change in temperature on Monday. In Jerusalem on Friday, a high temperature of 27 degrees centigrade, 81 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea, 40 degrees centigrade, 104 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
That was a look at Jerusalem weather. And now, for your local weather, here's meteorologist Glenn Foxen.
A cold front will be the mechanism to spark showers and thunderstorms early this Shabbos and Yontif. The wet weather will be followed by a beautiful conclusion to Yontif on Sunday. The official Jewish Experience radio program weather forecast. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Low temperatures in the mid-50s. Shabbos and Yontif, mostly cloudy, breezy, with a continued chance of showers and thunderstorms. High, 65 to 70 degrees. On Motzi Shabbos, mostly cloudy, with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Then, cloudy after midnight. Lows in the mid-40s. On Sunday, Yontif, mostly sunny, high in the mid-60s. Monday, mostly cloudy and cooler with a chance of showers, high 55 to 60. This has been meteorologist Glenn Foxen wishing everyone good weather and a good Shabbos in Yontif.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
And before we get into Mazel Tovs, I'd like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Abraham Schwartzberg, who has recently made a donation to the Jewish Experience radio program in honor of the yahrzeit of Moshe Leib Ben Abraham, whose yahrzeit will be the 19th of Nisan. And now with the Mazel Tovs this week is once again my daughter, Liba Delin.
The Mazel Tovs this week are Rabbi and Mrs. Yisroel Rosenfeld on the birth of a grandchild, Rabbi and Mrs. Nussan Adlin on the birth and bris of their son. Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Mr. and Mrs. Michael Kamensky on the birth of a baby boy. Dr. Mordechai and Hannah Rabinowitz on the birth of a granddaughter in Israel. Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Mr. and Mrs. Alan Margolis on the birth of a granddaughter. And Blanche Margolis on the birth of a great-granddaughter. Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Have a Freilichen Pesach, everybody, and a good Shabbos.
Let's take a look at some events around the community. May 22nd at 5 p.m. will mark the grand opening for the Aleph Institute. Aleph Institute provides religious and humanitarian support for tens of thousands of Jewish inmates and their families, as well as a wide range of reentry programs for the ex-inmates. There are over 80 volunteers who visit the prisons on a regular basis and 30 volunteers who visit the state hospitals and group homes as part of the Dorothy Friends program. In addition, there are over 300 people a week who benefit from the many supportive services being offered by the new Olive Center. For girls K through 8, Shira Day Camp is a place to be. Any level of observance accepted. 5-week session from June 30th to August 1st. It includes sports, arts, crafts, baking, outdoor swimming, activities, and lots of fun. For more information and a free SDC water bottle, call the Kollel Jewish Learning Center at 412-420-0220. The Meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at the Pittsburgh Kollel, 5808 Beacon Street, every Sunday evening from 7:30 to 9 p.m. The program is a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating or their weight, not for women only. Men are invited. For more information, call Ilana at 412-422-2224. Don't forget, you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can do it and your events by calling 412-979-5770 or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Wednesday for that week's program. Don't forget, candlelighting time tonight is 7:52 p.m. Giving up the Golan, Temple Mount, Gaza, West Bank, unilateral retreat? Stay tuned. Candid Comments is next. Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you've worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender. Everybody, welcome back. I'm Hirsch DeLynn. This is Candid Comments. You may wonder why I'm back on Kol HaMoed Pesach to speak to you today, and that's because what's in the news right now is Prime Minister Ehud Olmert at it again. Now it's reported by the Syrians to make a peace agreement that he's willing to give back all of the Golan. Now, the Golan Heights, of course, is one of the few areas that have been noted that Jews have been living now in relative peace. And this is, of course, part of the territory that was reclaimed during the 67 war, when a bunch of different Arab nations attacked Israel. Without getting into that, I don't want to spend a lot of time on that right now, and they attacked back. And, of course, they ended up with the West Bank and Golan and the Temple Mount. And now, what do we see? We see Prime Minister Ehud Olmert getting ready to give back the Golan. He's already talking about giving authority to the Temple Mount. We'll get into that in a minute. He's already talked about, and he has talked about giving back a lot of the West Bank. We'll talk about that. And he's made a unilateral retreat from Gaza, moving and displacing 9,000 Jews from their homes, 30 years worth of homes in Gaza that were sent there by the government. Now, this holiday that we are in right now is called Zman Chirusenu, the season of our freedom. We were taken out of Egypt by the Holy One, blessed be He. And we were taken out because of the fact that the Jews were to reclaim and live in the land given to them by God, the land of Israel. And that land actually extends a lot farther than the borders that are currently in the land right now. And these borders, of course, because of the secular world, have been flexible and have been opening and closing. And many wonder, why is Olmert doing this? And it's a terrible thing, but in his mind, just so you know, in the twisted area here, he feels very simply that he feels that if a two-state solution doesn't happen and we face a South African-style struggle for equal voting rights, he says as soon as that happens, the state of Israel is finished. He told that to the Haaretz newspaper recently. And that's kind of a sad situation. And that's been driving a lot of what he's doing now. But what he's doing is self-suicide. If he gives back the Golan Heights, this is the one area where Syria has used to launch attacks against Israel. If that goes back, that's a sure sign that Israel has no right to exist. On top of that, he's talking about giving back authority of the Temple Mount to other authorities to manage it. In other words, giving up our authority on it. And it's a difficult situation there. But and also talking about giving up authority to manage East Jerusalem altogether. As you see now, as you might see when you visit Israel, there's signs up already that says this area is verboten, so to speak, to Jews, and under the authority of the Palestinian Authority. Now, where does he get the right to do that? He gets the right to do that because most people in Israel, and we were there recently, don't pay attention, unfortunately. We have families that are living in Pittsburgh today, that say that until they left Israel, they couldn't see it either. And now they see it clearly. And some of them are going back, and hopefully they're going to take some action and alert and wake up their fellow citizens. In a small country like Israel, many people, unfortunately, that live there are asleep at the wheel and are about to give up many of these gains. Now, on the positive side, Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, who is current head of the Likud party, said that the next election is going to be a referendum on the current government's machinations, and he has no intention of honoring any of these deals if he's elected. And keep in mind that right now the Palestinian Authority has control over 45% of the West Bank already. The Jews live only on 5% of the West Bank, and they've been targeted left and right and, you know, bombed at and thrown at and everything else. And 50% of the West Bank is still uninhabited. So that makes it wide open for people to use the land, which has been not used because of political situations. So this is a very serious situation and something that needs attention. The Temple Mount, it says, they've had problems with it in and out. Now they want to give authority, all over authority, to control that to the Arabs. And if they do that, that's going to, and as many Temple Mount supporters have said, is going to be a very, very serious situation. Requests for communal Jewish prayer have been made over and over again for the Temple Mount, it's a very critical thing. And I quote from one of the rabbis, Rabbi Yisrael Ariel, which said, "It is our position that if the stature of the Jews on the Temple Mount were to change positively, then the standing of the State of Israel would immediately improve. This would affect a positive change for the benefit and security of all its citizens." And noting that the very day of mourning, morning prayers for the 6 million Holocaust victims, is also the day on which Hamas' incitement to violence and death to Jews emanated from the Temple Mount. I mean, this is not accident stuff. The Holy One, blessed be He, is controlling everything, and these kind of things are sent as messages to the Jewish people to wake up, if they can take it and if they can wake up. Please God, they will. I urge everybody that's listening to this broadcast, if you take a few minutes out, you can do it by email. It's very simple to do, is to register your displeasure with the current government. Let the Prime Minister's office know what's going on. It's very simple. You can go right to the site of the Israel government site and just let him know what's happening. This is very, very critical, because he may or may not pay attention, but he needs to know the sense of what's going on. And elections need to be held in Israel. They need to stop this guy. He's under indictment in 4 different areas. He's somehow getting away with that too. It's a crazy upside down situation, and we're going to find ourselves, God forbid, in a situation we may not be able to get out of. And maybe the people in Pittsburgh have the opportunity to at least voice their opinion and make some difference. We'll see. But it's something at least you can do, and you can do now. So please, take some sort of action today. Help save the State of Israel. For Candid Comments, this has been Hirsch Tallin. Have a Freilichen Pesach and a good Shabbos. Now for a look at the feminine side of things, reporting from Israel, here's Ms. Devorah Dalin.
One of the deepest concepts that form the basis of Judaism is the concept of the final redemption and the coming of Mashiach, the Messiah. In addition to the fact that it has never been experienced before, what the rabbis tell us will happen seems to be a utopian idea. We, in our secular, enlightened society, have been living with the predominant fact that human nature and the world itself cannot possibly come to such a perfect state of being. Also, many are happy with their current mode of life. They have food, clothes, a nice house and car, a beautiful family. It's only when tragedy strikes or bad news reaches us, God forbid, that we realize the truth and honestly begin yearning for the final redemption. As we approach the final days of the holiday of Pesach, preparations are made to consider the future. Many non-religious people have told me that they see Judaism as a revival of the past. The rituals and ceremonies we have seem to focus on things that happened back then. True, the past is very important, but it is only so when we use past lessons to help us today. In the words of George Santayana, those who fail to learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. Pesach shows us this idea. The first days of Pesach, we focus on the Exodus from Egypt, a past event. The last days of Pesach, we focus on Mashiach, an event of the future. In fact, the Baal Shem Tov established the idea of a Mashiach Seuda, a meal that parallels a Seder. We have 4 cups of wine and eat matzah, but instead of the Exodus from Egypt, we focus on our coming Exodus out of Galus. On the last days of Pesach, we read the section in the Torah dealing with Az Yashir, the song the Jews sang when they crossed the Red Sea. There were 10 songs that were sung during the course of history. The 10th is Shir Chadash, a new song that will be sung in the times of Mashiach. Interestingly, there were 2 versions of Az Yashir, a masculine one and a feminine one. The feminine song was led by Miriam, the sister of Moshe and Aaron, and the leader of the women. Her name means bitterness, for she, being a woman, was truly able to experience and understand the bitterness of exile. It was Miriam, with her feminine capacity for endurance and hope, who stood by the river, watching her baby brother Moshe and ensuring his rescue. The image of a watchful guardian brings to mind Rachel Imenu, Rachel, our matriarch and wife of Yaakov. She, who gave up her place in Ma'aret HaMachpelah in order that she would be there to cry for her children and intercede on their behalf. It is she, more than any other male patriarch or leader, that is able to feel our pain and empathize in our struggle. Because the women in Egypt felt the pain of exile more intensely than the men, their faith was stronger and more enduring. When the sin of the golden calf occurred, the women were not enticed by the idol, for they believed in Miriam and her family. We learned all of this previously at our Seder when we discussed the Exodus. Let us apply it to the future, for we are focusing on that in the last days of Pesach. Mashiach is a person, time, revelation, that will bring perfection to the world, peace between nations, and prosperity for all. Today, we are merely disillusioned by a facade of prosperity. How can one be truly prosperous and happy when his brother is suffering? Our faith in goodness, morality, and godliness, and our application of these values are what will bring Mashiach. Sometimes it takes pain and suffering in order to create enduring faith. But we have gone through all that. Enough is enough. It is time for Mashiach. Have a good Shabbos and a Mashiach Tikka Pesach.
Yeah.
Now it's time for another classic story from our master storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
Yachatz is the part of the Seder when we break the middle matzah. When Yachatz is performed, two radically different matzah identities emerge. One half of the matzah, the smaller piece, becomes poor man's bread. The larger piece, the afikomen, on the other hand, is symbolic of the Pesach sacrifice, which was eaten in a manner of majesty and royalty. So the question is, how could one single piece of matzah harbor such a split personality? After it is broken into two, we see that the middle matzah combined to utterly divergent themes. How could they have coexisted in one single cracker? We can understand this with the following story. The Baal Shem Tov, founder of the Hasidic movement, which revived mysticism, joy, and sincere worship of Hashem as the focal point of Judaism, would sometimes sign his name Yisrael from Okop. Okop is not the name of a town. The Baal Shem Tov actually originated from the town of Tolost. Rather, Okop means trench in Polish. Tolost was originally a walled town, but at some point in history the walls were destroyed, leaving numerous trenches. The Baal Shem Tov's parents were so desperately poor that they could not afford even a modest home in which to live. So they sought refuge in one of these trenches, and that is where the Baal Shem Tov was born, hence the signature Yisrael from Okop, Yisrael from the trench. While the Baal Shem Tov himself was not the actual Moshiach, we are nevertheless promised that the mystical revival which he initiated will ultimately be responsible for ushering the Messianic era. Thus, when telling the above story, the Rebbe Rishab would say, "From the Baal Shem Tov's trenches, we have been granted the strength to get out of all the other trenches, for the Baal Shem Tov's influence is unfaltering." One cannot help but marvel at the irony here. The enormous influence of the Baal Shem Tov, which will eventually be responsible for the global utopia of the future era, had such pitiful and humble beginnings. All men will one day enjoy wealth and physical abundance thanks to a person who lived in a trench. But this precisely is the point. And as David HaMelech said, "Out of the straits I called upon Hashem. Hashem answered me with expansiveness." The very wide can only come after we have been constrained through the very narrow. And it is this dynamic which the middle matzah embodies. Poverty and redemption emerge from the same single piece of matzah to teach us that the tragic and the tremendous follow one after the other. So even if you look around and see a fractured world with no remedy in sight, do not despair. In truth, Moshiach is just around the corner, and we will soon emerge from our trenches to the Geula Shelema. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you a kosher and a freilich and Pesach and a good Shabbos.
That is the talented fingers on the keyboard of Moshe Bakar take us out today. A couple of reminders. May 22nd at 5 p.m. is the grand opening of the Aleph Institute. And you want to be sure to stop by there. You give them a call. Girls K through 8, share a day camp. Call the Kollel Jewish Learning Center for more information, 412-420-0220. And a meeting, Food, Ags, and Recovery Anonymous, meeting at the Pittsburgh Kollel, 5808 Beacon Street, every Sunday evening from 7:30 to 9. Call Ilan at 412-422-2224. Don't forget to call us also if you want to have your Mazel Tovs and events on our program at 412-979-5770. Or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Wednesday for that week's program. As we wrap up another exciting Chol HaMoed Intermediate Days of the Festival edition of the Jewish Experience radio program, and I thank once again our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Rabbi Moshe Bakar on the keyboard, Dr. Michael Shulman, Miss Liba DeLin for doing our Mazel Tovs, Miss Deborah DeLin and Miss Pearlie DeLin for selecting our music and making this whole thing a very big family affair. And, of course, our engineer, Jamila Bossenstein, for another outstanding show. Then we get candlelighting time is 7:52 p.m. It's been a ton of fun. But I do have to run. We have Shabbos coming up and Pesach at the same time and all kinds of neat stuff going on. So have a great weekend and enjoy it. Now, we got Jewish Radio is here for you. Will you be here for Jewish Radio? Consider donating today at jewishexperience@verizon.net. Very simple to do. I'm Hirsch DeLin. Have a wonderful Shabbos and a very Freilichen Shvi Shel Pesach and Achron Shel Pesach. We'll see you all next week or on the web at JewishExperienceRadio.com anytime. And we'll be back here next Friday, same Yiddish time, same Yiddish channel. Take care. Be well.